Hi, this is Bobby Warren, and welcome to another episode of the Zest for Life podcast. With me today is Cleveland fan extraordinaire, Stephen F. Jose. I think the F stands for freaking. Stephen freaking Jose. So I think I'm going to turn the keys over to Steve and let him drive this thing for a little while, and if I need to take it back, I will. But what's going on, Steve? Why are we here today?
Well, we're here. It's Tuesday, February 7th, 2 days after Super Bowl 51, LI, however you want to refer to it. You know, we saw the New England Patriots battle back, win their fifth Super Bowl in seven tries in franchise history over the upstart Atlanta Falcons, who kind of were a surprise throughout the NFL season. You know, and I didn't have a dog in this fight. I watched the Super Bowl as a casual football fan, a sports fan, and just a regular American who's checking out the biggest TV event every year. So I didn't have a dog in the fight. I know there are some Cleveland Browns peppered throughout the game, and there are plenty of Cleveland ties, but I don't want to dwell on that. Let's dwell on how you were feeling watching the football game. It looked like you guys were out after about the second quarter.
It did.
And
it
the game did. Was boring for me for because it just wasn't a game. And then you guys came and made it a game all of a sudden.
It was one of those things where, for those who saw my column in the Daily Record, I want to give a shout-out to Mike Plant, our sports editor, for allowing me to write about my hometown Patriots. I predicted the Patriots would win 34-27. They won 34-28, so that was pretty good. But I did not think this is how we would get to 34 points. I thought the Patriots would be just ahead the entire game, and Atlanta would be keeping it close. You know, one of the reasons I thought that was because I had heard that Atlanta's secondary was in the bottom five of the NFL, and that Brady would be able to exploit that. However, you know, the Falcons had the number one sack leader, Vic Beasley, and they, you know, they keep talking about how fast the defense was. Indeed, they were. So if the front seven did their job, then that could help overcome a poorly ranked secondary. So I thought we would be in front the whole game. We go, you know, three and out. They go three and out, I believe, or they have to punt. Then we have to punt again. Then all of a sudden it's 7-0. It's like, okay, wait a minute. This is not how I had scripted Super Bowl LI 51. And then we're down 14-0, 21-0, 21-3, 28-3. And I tell people, I'm a gracious loser, but I'm a sore winner. And I just sat there, and I was just subdued, just sitting there quietly. I'm like, okay, you know, if we can just get a touchdown, you know, before the half, we get a stop and get a touchdown, the next thing you know, it's going to be 21-14, we're in it. But, man, it was tough being down 28-3. My brother-in-law, Sean Vall, thought, you know, I'd lost faith, but I didn't. You know, I don't know. It's hard to explain why I didn't lose faith, but I think I'm an eternal optimist, even though I can be very sarcastic. And it's one of those things, while there's still time on the clock, you can get things done. I believe, and I might be wrong, and somebody with better sports history can correct me, but I think Indianapolis scored like three scores on us like within like a minute 14 one time. So these types of things are not common, but not impossible. Yeah. So I always have hope, brother.
You mentioned faith. I mean, this is my pregame pick before Super Bowl 51 was I was thinking an Atlanta upset. I've been hearing all year about, you know, problems with New England's defense. Atlanta's had the best offense all season, I think top five in NFL history. And I know that the top four NFL offenses had been 0-4 in Super Bowls before, and that's a trend I thought was going to end this year. And it's been a weird sports year, right? We had Villanova, if you want to go back to March Madness. I mean, that was an improbable, the most amazing last 10 seconds of a basketball game. You have the Cavs coming back in historic fashion.
Down
3-1 to beat the all-time best basketball team in regular season history. And then you have the
I see the team has gone unnamed, nameless by Stephen F. Huzay.
That team out west we're not going to talk about. And then we have, you know, the Chicago Cubs breaking a streak without winning a World Series since before the Great War. I mean, very few people alive had seen a Chicago Cubs World Series win. And so I thought maybe this would be the time that the mighty New England machine might get upset, something we hadn't seen in a while. You know, it seems like only Eli Manning has that recipe. But so as a casual sports fan, though, I mean, the game was over. I'm looking here, 28-3, with 8:31 left in the third quarter. I mean, the second quarter, it seemed like every time I looked up from my plate of food, Atlanta scoring another touchdown. And we just kind of zoned out. You know, I'm sitting with some buddies watching the game. And, you know, we were more vested, it seemed like, in the Lady Gaga performance and wondering what the heck was going on with the Patriots. And then the next time we look up, it's a game again. So, I mean, what were you worried at all in the first half, Bobby? And then at what point in the second half, when you guys were making a run, did you think, hey, we might actually have a chance at this?
Okay. In the first half, I was not worried. Down, you know, was it 21-0 at one point?
Yeah, you guys scored a field goal with 2 seconds left.
Okay, so 21-3, we're going into the half, and I'm not worried. The Patriots do an incredible job with making adjustments. And I think Belichick said during the halftime that you can't wait until the half to make adjustments. It's too late. So in my column, I talk about Ernie Adams, who's our director of football research, being our secret weapon. And so Ernie's the one who can analyze tendencies, strengths, and weaknesses of the opposing team and come up with strategy. So I imagine he was doing his job as we were falling behind. I really, you know, I when we're 28-3, you know, I'm like, okay, how are we going to do this? But where I think I was my lowest was when it was first and 10 at the New England 22. Atlanta is driving. If they get that field goal, it's 31-3, right? And we need 4 touchdowns.
Okay.
And so we had a series of events. I don't know if I'm remember them correctly, but we get a sack, and then we get a penalty. And all of a sudden, it's like 3rd and 33, and they can't convert on that, and they have to punt. They were in field goal range. Matt Bryant is one of the best kickers in the game. And if they're on the 22 and they don't gain another yard, you add 17 yards, so that's a 39-yard field goal. I said he can make it in his sleep, and he can probably make it with a hangover, but he wasn't given that opportunity. And one of the stats I heard was that New England ran 45 plays, offensive plays, in the first half, and Atlanta only had 46 plays the entire game.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now. I mean, it's astounding. New England had 93 plays to 46. Time of possession, 40:31 for New England to 23:27. That's amazing.
So that's 40 minutes that that world's fastest defense had to be on the field.
Yep.
And so what I was amazed, somebody pointed out, and I'm a big fan of the people out at Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. somebody said that when it was 28-3, Atlanta ran 16 offensive plays after that. 12 of them were pass plays. And, you know, they had Devontae Freeman. I think Tevin Coleman got injured. But they were running. They were hitting those perimeter runs. When they went outside, it seemed like they could do whatever they want. But towards the second half, it seemed that the New England defense was just a little bit more disciplined, and that those outside opportunities weren't as abundant as they were in the first half.
And it seemed like Atlanta really abandoned the run in that second half here. I mean, only 18 carries for the game, 104 wow. yards, a 5.8 average. That's respectable.
And Devontae Freeman had, what, almost 7 yards, I think.
Yeah, he averaged close to seven. He had 75 for 11 touches there. What was the tipping point, though? So at what point did you see, holy moly, we could win this game?
Well, it wasn't after Gostkowski missed that extra point. I'm like, oh, come on. What else could go wrong? This was a tough year for Gostkowski. University of Memphis product, you know, he has been an incredibly reliable kicker, and this was a tough year for him. I kind of wonder if he'll be back next year, but I don't know. Once they started scoring and they scored again, it was just like off to the races. And it took Brady to just come back. And not Brady. I mean, it takes the entire team. So it's not just Brady. But it was just amazing. It was like, what? Again? And, of course, I'm getting louder and louder and louder with every score. And I don't drink, but I sounded like I was drinking that night, just the way I was screaming, just...
Well, I mean, it's shocking here. I pulled up the win probability real quick. You know, for most of the game, I'm trying to see where that's at. You know, after about the first quarter, Atlanta's on the positive side of the win probability. They get dang near to 100% for most of the game. And the odds don't flip until about 2 minutes left in the game.
Isn't that crazy?
Or no, I'm sorry. 57 seconds left in the fourth quarter.
When it's 28-28.
It's a 50-50 toss-up. And if you're Atlanta, you got to be just shaking your heads. Because it looked like in the second quarter there, they were high-five and they thought they won their first Super Bowl in franchise history. And just to have it ripped, have the jaws of victory just snatched from you. I don't think that's the right phrase. But either way, the Falcons got played. And all right, so... Fifth Super Bowl since, when was the first one? 2001.
2001. Now, I know you said we were 5-2 or 5 out of 7, but there were two earlier New England teams. We lost handily to the Chicago Bears, and the Packers also handed it to us as well. So we're 5-4, but we're 5-2 in the Belichick
Brady
era.
Thank you for that clarification. But your fifth one now. How does this rank in the five that you've won? Does it feel better because of the Deflategate thing at all?
Yes.
So I don't know if you want to do a quick ranking real quick, or maybe just put where this one ranks for you guys.
To me, it's the best because we overcame improbable odds. When I say we, you know, I buy Patriots merchandise, so I'm adding to their payroll, so that's where we come in. But it was just such an improbable victory. Patriots fans are used to these kind of heroics, so it wasn't like it was out of the pale. But let's face it, when you're down 28-3 late in the third or midway through the third quarter, it's tough. It's tough.
Being a Browns fan, I'm sure we've been down 28-3 a bunch, and there's no hope. That's usually when people check out and head for the exits early.
You know, and like the Deflategate stuff, I wish Commissioner Goodell would release like all the PSI data the NFL collected, just to see how it compares. Because I just don't think, you know, the Patriots cheated. Yes, I'm a homer, and I love the Patriots, and I'm always going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I just don't see where they cheated. And I think if Roger Goodell had the information that would show that the Patriots cheated with the data they collected the following season, he would leak it, just like a lot of bad information was leaked during the investigation that proved to be false, like how many balls tested below 2 PSI or whatever. But to me, this was special. And to see Roger Goodell leave that podium so quickly was a sweet surprise, and I loved it. I loved that he got booed by the crowd there. You couldn't hear a word he was saying. And I know he's in a tough position. He's got to please 32 owners, many who hate Robert Kraft and the Patriots because they win year in and year out despite the rules for parity, like, you know, the salary cap and things like that, free agency. You know, someone told me that they think Belichick is the best coach ever because he's had to do this in the salary cap era. And that, he says, also, if you think about Brady, how many Hall of Famers have played with Tom Brady, and how many Hall of Famers played with Terry Bradshaw, who was the original TB12?
Yeah. So let's take a step back now. You know, Super Bowl's under the belt. Tom Brady, terrific Tom's got his fifth ring. Where does he stand? Where do the Patriots stand in the modern sports era of the last 15, 20 years in the free agency era? You know, we've got some great dynasties going. You know, LeBron's a one-man dynasty himself.
Indeed.
Every year, you could just automatically punch a ticket to June for him. You know, you've got kind of the Duncan Popovich era. You've got, you know, the Yankees, and even the Red Sox had a little run here. You know, and then the Patriots now have just dominated, you know, the 2000s. Are they the best, or where do you throw them in there?
I wish I could say they were the best, but the truth is I don't know. When I moved away from Boston as a young kid, and back then, you know, before the internet, before cable really had a strong foothold, you know, I couldn't watch the Celtics games. I couldn't watch the Bruins games. And, you know, you could see the Red Sox probably more. And actually, you got to see the Celtics a lot because it seemed like the 76ers and the Lakers were on every week, you know, one of those three teams. So I really don't know. I know what they've been able to do in the NFL is extremely difficult, but I just don't know. I'd rather hear your take on that because I think you have a broader sports background.
I mean, they've got to be up there, if not the best. I mean, that's football's long been the game of inches and game of parity more so than probably any other sport besides maybe college basketball, where every year there's so much changeover and turnover and so many little things can happen year to year. There's so many players on a team. There's so much baked into an NFL season that can go wrong.
Yeah.
That it's almost like the last man standing, whereas in other sports you don't see that as much. You know, I don't know. They've got to be up there. I mean, I don't know how you can argue it. As much as, you know, us in Cleveland are tired of Deflategate and Tom Brady, just like the rest of the country, I'm sure. But you got to just tip your hat after it's all said and done. I mean, they looked like they were out of this game completely.
They looked
like it was going to be a slaughter. And here we are now. With their fifth one.
Celebrating number five. You know, I do want to thank you. You being a longtime Cleveland Browns fan, you gave us Bill Belichick. You gave us Ernie Adams. Ernie Adams was with Belichick when he was with the Browns, and if you read my column, Art Modell said, I'll pay anybody $10,000 if they can tell me what Ernie Adams does. He just wins, baby. We got Jabal Sheard, who's a nice contributor on defense. Barkevious Mingo. I think most of his impact has maybe been on special teams at this point. And when Deion Lewis is in the lineup, the Patriots are undefeated. And talk about Browns players. How about Alex Mack on Atlanta? Playing with a fractured fibula.
Yeah.
Man, I feel a little queasy, and I'm going to stay home.
Yeah. I mean, you want to flash back a couple years when the Browns were rolling with Brian Hoyer. He was the reason why. And yeah. I think that's fairly evident. Once he got injured, we went from 7-4 to finish the season 7-9. It's just you got to have a foundation on the offensive line, and I think he really helped that team moving forward. Let's also kind of rewind a little bit. What else might have stood out on this Super Bowl Sunday for you, Bobby? Any of the commercials stand out?
No.
Any of the performances stand out?
I'll tell you
anything
what.
Else that you didn't
yeah.
see?
Because now I'm a progressive rock fan. Yeah.
For instance, let me just jump in real quick. Seeing former President George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush come out, that was a
nice.
Neat moment, regardless of politics. It was good to see them out of the hospital. And
I saw a meme early on that said, President Bush gained more rushing yards than the New England Patriots. That was nice. And Joe Buck said, you know, kind of tipped his hat to our 41st president when he said that he's the toughest man in the building. He got shot down.
Yeah. He's a legit soldier from, I don't know if he's technically the greatest generation, but he sure seems like it.
Yeah. But let me tell you about, now, I'm a progressive rock fan. You know my favorite band is?
Dream Theater.
There you go. I am not a fan of Lady Gaga's music. You happened to introduce me to her. You let me listen to an album of hers. And I could tell her voice was incredible. So she's a wonderful talent, just doesn't sing my style of music. But I was so pleased when I saw her halftime performance. No wardrobe malfunctions. She didn't get political. I think she was just there to entertain her fans, maybe pick up some new fans. And it was just a pleasure to watch. It was good. I liked it.
Yeah, it was we all stopped what we were doing at the Worcester Inn, and we stopped eating, we stopped drinking our drinks, and we just watched that performance. I mean, the youngest kids with us to the oldest folks in the room, we just all stopped and weren't on, you know, a bunch of different political stripes and musical tastes involved, but everybody just looked at each other and they said, wow, that's what a halftime performance at a Super Bowl should be.
Yeah.
It grabbed everybody. Even if you don't know some of the songs, it was a spectacle to watch. And she did what you needed somebody to do in that role.
I think I recognize two songs.
Oh, but you probably know the words, be honest.
But anyway, you know, and I got to say, you know, Atlanta, they did an incredible job. I mean, they couldn't seal the deal, but I really can't knock them. They had us down 28-3, and it doesn't happen by accident. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's you play till the clock says zero.
Exactly.
And the game's over. There's nothing else you can do, especially in the Super Bowl, the biggest game of the season.
And if you think about it, Atlanta never trailed in the Super Bowl until that last catch in overtime.
Yep.
That's the only time they trailed. So I hope Pats fans don't rag on them because they had our number for most of the game.
Yeah, it seemed like Atlanta came out of the gate, caught them off guard a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe there was some fatigue or butterflies on both sides of, you know, the 2 week layoff and, you know, going through the media circus and all that stuff. But
You gotta tip your hat to Dan Quinn and Kyle Shanahan, and I don't know their defensive coordinator, but Devin McCourty, I believe, was on the NFL Network after the game. And he said what you said, that, you know, Atlanta surprised us. They did some things that the Patriots weren't ready for.
Yeah.
And then they got their adjustments made.
Yeah, I mean, the conventional wisdom all year was that the Dallas Cowboys would probably be there in the end. And maybe Green Bay had a little run there at the end of the season where it looked like they might have had a shot. But in the end, it was Atlanta, a team I don't think anybody picked at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, you wouldn't think. And I tell you, coming from New England, if Brady would have been named the NFL MVP for the season, I would not have complained. But let's face it, he only played in 12 games. Matt Ryan did it over 16 games, and I thought it was well-deserved, him getting the MVP.
Very good. And then lastly, Bobby, what does Tom Brady do from here and Bill Belichick? Do you think they ride out on the sunset, or they got another 5-10 years in them?
Okay, now you know I'm an NFL Network junkie, and so I don't know. The journalist in me has to attribute this. I don't know. I think it's LaDainian Tomlinson, or however you say it. We're print journalists, so we just got to spell things right. But he says what you do now is you just separate yourself from the rest of the field. I don't know. I figured, you know, he wins his fifth Super Bowl, he retires, then, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo takes the reins. But Brady says he's not ready to retire. And, you know, the Patriots went 14-2 this season, and I thought this 14-2 team was much stronger than our 16-0 team that ultimately lost to the 9-7 Giants in the Super Bowl with the David Tyree catch, I believe, or phenomenal catches. You know, Giants had our number. But when Edelman made that ridiculous catch, I didn't think it was a catch.
At first blush, it didn't look like it. It almost looked like it got picked off for a second, too.
Right, and I said, that's our David Tyree catch. That's our Tyree catch. And, oh, my, it was just, oh, something I want to tell you about is, like, you know, you had asked earlier about when did you know and when did you do that. You know, Belichick is, you know, he surprised me with the coin toss, you know, at overtime. Now, Matthew Slater, he gets ribbed a lot in the locker room about how come he can't win a coin toss. I guess he loses a lot of them. But typically, the Patriots at the beginning of the game, if they win the toss, they always defer, right?
Okay.
Well, most of the time they defer.
Yeah.
Against Houston, they wanted the ball.
Okay.
Because I guess they wanted to set the tone, right? So this time they lose, and Atlanta defers, so I'm thinking, good, we're going to set the tone, and then we don't. Now, when you get to overtime, right, Belichick's thinking is that you defer. If you win, you also defer, and you play, you know, basically you play defense, right? Because with these new overtime,
despite the fact that the touchdown, for those who may not know, in overtime, if you score a touchdown on your first possession, the game's over.
Right. So he wants his defense out there to shut you down or hold you to a field goal. And now New England had the number one scoring defense this season. You wouldn't have you couldn't tell it through three quarters of the football, of the Super Bowl.
Well, they almost scored as many points as your offense did, so they weren't far behind.
But so I was surprised when Matthew Slater won the coin toss. They said, we'll take it. I thought for sure Belichick would defer, you know, to defend first. But it made sense. After I thought about it, it made sense because the offense was rolling. And Belichick could see that the defense was getting tired and that this was, you know, you just keep your foot on the gas. So.
Hey, he did what a good manager in that situation would do, a head coach. He knew his players, put them in the position to win the game, and they came out on top. It's hard to argue with greatness like that at all phases of the game and all levels. Well, is it a repeat next year, or who do you think is in the Super Bowl come 2018?
I don't see Atlanta going back. I'd like to see Dallas go. They did so great with their two rookies, Dak and Zeke, that I would love to see them go. It's hard to get back there. Ask Dan Marino. But, you know, the Patriots fan in me says, yeah, it's going to be Patriots-Cowboys next season. But also, I'm looking for good things from your Cleveland Browns. I think you have some great talent on offense, and if you just had a quarterback that could help coordinate all that, you're in good position. And you got Greg Williams, your defensive coordinator, now.
Well, things definitely seem like they're looking up, but I guess I've just reached that point where I'll believe it when I see it. I'm like a weather, somebody watching the weather in Ohio. If it's going to be sunny tomorrow, I'll believe it when I see it.
Indeed. All right, this is Bobby Warren and Stephen F. Housay for the Zest for Life podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Have a good weekend, folks.